Joining me now on Notably Texan are members of Houston's Two Star Symphony. I've got on the telephone with me violinists Jerry Ochoa and Deborah Brown. I really appreciate both of you speaking with me today.
We appreciate you having us.
Yeah, thanks for talking to us.
It's great to talk to folks all around the great state of Texas, making the telephone call in all the way from Houston. Of course, you're going to be making the trek to Greenville for a performance tomorrow night inside the 1925 Stringer Mortuary Building. Getting everyone in, kind of into the spooky spirit for All Hallows Eve coming up soon. It's billed as a concert to die for, and this is a pretty cool thing. Is this going to be the first time y'all have ever played in Greenville, I would assume?
Yes, it's our first trip to Greenville, but I'm very excited. The flyer is pretty amazing.
The mortuary, that's really right up our alley.
I was going to say, is this a first?
First mortuary?
It's tough to say.
our cellist lives in a building that has a mortuary in it, or did have in it.
Oh, that's true. We've been around mortuaries.
Okay. Tomorrow night at 8 p.m., we'll talk a little bit more about the details. Let's get into some information about you two. For folks that are not familiar with the group, tell me a bit about yourselves, like where you're from and how you got into making music. Why don't you start off, Jerry?
I am, like all of Tucson, I'm from the general Houston vicinity. I grew up in a little bitty town called Hitchcock, and I've played the violin my whole life. I had actually gone a few years without playing it very much when I met the Two Star Ladies. They were a trio at the time, and this was early 2003. I guess I started making music with them, and we've been playing together ever since. So that's kind of it's a pretty straight path for musical. I started playing very, very seriously. I started doing competitions when I was 5. I won my first state competition at 6, and then I went to a performing arts high school. So I've always been real active on the violin, but I ended up going off to film school in Austin and didn't play it for a few years until, again, I met up with the Two Star Ladies who were composing their own music. And to me, I think that made all the difference because that was where I really learned to sort of accept and come to terms with what I could do with the violin.
You're also a writer, producer, director, too.
Yes. When I'm not working as a violin teacher or performer, I've done a lot of freelance producing work for different cable channels for TLC and Discovery and a few others. And
very cool.
I do short films and whatever I can do to try to make money or spend money that's not mine.
You've got your hands in a lot of fun projects, it sounds like, though. So I appreciate you kind of talking a little bit about your background, Jerry. And how about you, Deborah Brown? Talk a little bit about where you're from and what drew you to music.
I'm also from a little place south of Houston called Leak City, Texas.
Yes.
Played violin for a little while when I was in 7th grade and then kind of gave up. And then our cellist, Margaret Lejeune, ended up moving into my apartment.
Okay.
And there was an opportunity to get free ice cream if you played an open mic at this spot.
Ice cream? Are you kidding?
Free ice cream, yes. So we wrote 3 songs that sounded like pirate tunes and made everyone dress up like pirates. And that's how it all began.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's how so many of the best projects in the world begin, frankly, is through writing pirate songs, you know?
Yes.
No. What's amazing is we still encourage people to dress up like pirates for most of our shows.
Really? Wow. Well, that's fascinating. So peg legs are encouraged, apparently, then.
Of course.
Well, good to know. Keep that in mind if you're heading out to the show featuring Two Star Symphony tomorrow night over in Greenville. Now, speaking of the name Two Star Symphony, and you kind of touched on this a little bit, both of you did, but tell me about how and when the group officially kind of formed, and how did you devise the name Two Star Symphony?
Again, Margaret Lejeune, our cellist. She is a fan of an artist named Mary Timoney, and one of her songs, there's some lyrics about dancing underneath a two-star symphony sky, and that's where the name came from.
I see.
Yes, and free ice cream where it started, and then we got our violist, Joanna Bird, or Joe Bird. Her background is pretty much metal.
Yeah.
So she brings a whole other layer to this crazy machine we've made.
That's pretty cool. I noticed that she does some work with Southern Backtones.
Oh, yes.
That's cool. We play them here on the show, so I was excited to see that.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
And I guess you kind of have the added, I'm going to call it a benefit, but there's almost kind of the double entendre with the name Two Star Symphony. You know, for folks that don't know it, they might think it implies that it's a rating system of some sort.
That's true. We've gotten that.
So I really dig the name Two Star Symphony.
Well, thank you.
Thanks. Yeah, I keep thinking we should make up a ton of different fake background stories for that name. It's just a different one every time.
Now, I'm going to be honest. I'm frankly a bit of a layman when it comes to classical music, but I do find the process of creating these kind of epic symphonic pieces really fascinating. I was hoping that you two could talk about the ways that Two Star Symphony deviates sort of from the norm and how you write and arrange songs.
Well, it's funny. We have what is apparently an unusual process for a classical ensemble, although it's completely normal for bands, which is that we don't ever write anything out. We bring ideas to the group, and it almost always starts with the cello or the viola on the low end.
Okay.
But they'll come up with a bass line or a framework for a song, and then we'll just work on it together, sitting in a circle, kicking ideas around until we've got something, everybody's got a part that we like. Everybody's responsible for their own part, but because we do it the way we do, and we've got a very similar musical sensibility, by the time we've worked out what the song needs to sound like, it's also memorized.
Right.
We never write anything down. We've done 5 albums, full-length ballet scores, movie scores. We've never written down any of our music.
That's amazing.
Which also means we're completely dependent on each other. For better or for worse.
Right.
We live off of each other. We only know these songs because of each other's cues. Nobody else could learn these parts because our songs have gotten really elaborate and fairly sophisticated, some of them, and I can't imagine trying to teach them to somebody with no sheet music. I mean,
sure. So, yeah, basically the rule is nobody can ever leave the band then.
Yep, we are bound together.
I think generally also one composer writes all the parts and
right.
hands them out, so it's really organic.
It's interesting because we didn't do it on purpose. It's just how our writing style develops. But it does, you know, outside people seem to find it really interesting or really odd. And it's become kind of one of our calling cards, I guess.
Talking with Deborah and Jerry, who are violinists with Two Star Symphony, my guests this afternoon on Notably Texan. Now, the group has received some noteworthy accolades, such as Best Indefinable Band 2 years in a row at the Houston Press Music Awards, which I think is great. Notably Texan certainly approves of that honor because we're just kind of wildly eclectic here on this show. So that's a great moniker, if you will, to have for the band.
Luckily, our local newspapers support us enough to come up with categories so we can fit into something.
Yeah, we're pretty certain they invented that category for us.
Well, that works. Well, that's great, though. You got that 2 years in a row, and you were also featured on PBS television a couple of years ago, right?
We've gotten to play South by Southwest a few times.
Cool.
And in conjunction with that, PBS ended up recording and broadcasting, doing a short national feature about us. That was a really cool experience, yeah.
I bet. It's hard to beat that kind of exposure. And, you know, speaking of exposure, it's not necessarily easy to get the exposure that you'd like to as an independent group, much less an unusual music ensemble. I wonder, does group ever feel like there are just not enough eclectic music stations and folks out there that take interest?
Sometimes we feel a little defeated, like we're not sure how to make this our full-time work.
Right.
How to make enough money. But then at the same time, especially Houston's been just so great for us. We have a wide fan base here, and we are playing often, and that's awesome.
Dallas has been always a wonderful place to us as well. We actually formed in Austin and moved back to Houston.
Okay.
Because we kept getting hired to play shows for money in Houston.
Interesting.
And in Austin, we were begging to do free shows, and nobody wanted a string quartet. So I know it goes against the conventional wisdom, but Houston has been infinitely more supportive to us as musicians than we ever would have guessed. You know, I mean, Houston's been really, really warm to us.
Houston music over the years has kind of been associated with a lot of the rap and the R&B stuff. The big artists have come out of Houston in that vein. And, you know, there's some great rock and roll acts coming from Houston. I understand that all types of music are being created all over the state, but you're really kind of stepping outside of Houston's image there, doing what you do, and I think that's wonderful.
It was a pleasant surprise to find the level of support, you know, for what we do just on our own throughout the city, but again, I mean, we can't argue with the generosity. It's been fantastic.
Now, I know that Houston, of course, has good public radio coverage down there. We are a public listener-supported radio station for Northeast Texas. I wondered if you two or either of you had any comments about how important public radio is and why people should support it.
Oh, public radio is our lifeline. I mean, all of our biggest shows in Houston, almost literally every major show we've had has been affiliated with the public radio station here in town. We've actually recorded albums at the public radio station here in town. I can't imagine. I don't know what radio station would play our music if it wasn't for public radio.
We are actually performing for a silent film series. We first got hired to do that because of the public radio station here. They had been funding the silent film. I think, unfortunately, they just lost their funding for that, and kind of a big push to show the community how important it is to keep projects like this going and hopefully get some funds back.
Really appreciate you giving a little insight on why it's important to an independent band like you. Let's just remind folks that, you know, it's listener support that keeps programs like this and stations like this going strong. So you can always visit our website, ketr.org, and pitch in, because every little bit really does make a difference.
And anyone listening, please do it, because honestly, it's such a big deal for us. It's how we're able to get our music out there, and I know we're not the only group like that.
Now, you're playing this show tomorrow night inside a former mortuary in Greenville. Just another night, frankly, for the Two Star Symphony, right?
Yeah.
It's going to be pretty special. I don't know. We're excited.
October is our season, for sure.
Yes.
We would really actually like to be the next Danny Elfman. We need a new Tim Burton to be the next Danny Elfman for.
Right. What can people expect at this show?
We give it our all in every show. It's all original music, of course, and our music is dark, but it's not depressing at all. I mean, we never think of it even as being particularly dark until other people react to it. It's,
yeah.
It's entertaining music, and we have a beautiful set of instruments that were all made as a batch from the same set of wood by one maker, and they sound amazing together.
Oh, wow.
And the idea, you know, a string quartet to die for, a spooky show, I mean, that's not just something they're doing for this. I mean, that's who we are.
Yeah.
So you're going to see some genuine, hopefully awesome darkness. I don't know.
It's spooky, like when you're six and getting dressed for Halloween and you're super excited. If there's a moment in our music that's making you uncomfortable or maybe not your favorite part, just give it a second and it'll change. We have really big changes in all of our pieces. They go in many different directions and then come back together. So just give us a chance. It'll be awesome.
It's taking place tomorrow night at 8 p.m. in Greenville in the upstairs of a rare Egyptian revival structure. It's over at 2611 Stonewall Street. It's currently occupied by Downtown Art Party. And if folks want to get any more information about this, they can contact the Greenville Chamber Convention and Visitors Bureau at 903-455-1510 for ticketing information and other details. Hope that it turns out to be a success and that you can come back and do more shows in the region.
We'd love to.
We would love to make that a thing.
Well, I really appreciate you taking some time out of your busy schedule to talk with us here on Notably Texan. I really enjoy the music you are creating, and I'm looking forward to exposing my audience to more sounds from Two Star Symphony. And I want to thank Jerry Ochoa and Deborah Brown, who are the violinists from Two Star Symphony, for calling in from Houston this afternoon and spending some time with us here on Notably Texan. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All the music you heard in this presentation was by Two Star Symphony from their record Love and Other Demons, available at their Bandcamp site. Big thanks again to Jerry and Deborah from Two Star Symphony for taking some time and speaking with Notably Texan on 88.9 KETR.